Good morning, Jake. How are you doing?
Morning, Mitch. I'm well, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you for asking. Thanks for joining us. So why? What do you think the proposed downgrade is all about?
Well, I mean, there are several stated reasons, bureaucratic reasons, if you like, for changing the status of CPACs. None of them really seems to add up, so it's a bit of a mystery. You mentioned that certain statements have been issued by both Labour and Greens MPs. In the Greens statement, they say specifically that the confusion to which this has given rise risks an inference in the community at large that it's somehow politically motivated. I've no evidence for that, but I've certainly seen plenty of letters and submissions and pleas to the university authorities which have that as a very strong theme, that people strongly suspect that it's because we've spoken out on some of these difficult issues that we're being now targeted for a downgrade.
And do you think the downgrade would be as damaging as these letters have been described? What would be the effect of a downgrade?
Well, some of the energy, or a lot of the energy in CPACs really, and what sets us aside from ordinary university departments is the fact that we are embedded in a broader peace community. So, for example, we have an elected governing council, and some members of that council involve themselves in some of our special projects, like the West Papua project about the rights and freedoms of the people of West Papua, the Human Survival Project about the need for global nuclear disarmament, these kinds of things, and they report to the council and in our annual reports. So a lot of the kind of vitality of the centre is located in its own unique structure of governance, which we wouldn't have if we were downgraded to a department. The other point is that when it comes to something like, for example, the academic boycott of Israel, I personally am both a supporter and an exponent of the academic boycott of Israel, but it's, I think, more significant still when you consider that the governing council of CPACs have on several occasions voted in favour of that and voted and indicated its support for it. Therefore, we are the only part of any Australian university which has a pro-boycott policy. So we have a political voice of our own, and the risk would be that that political voice would be silenced.
Yeah, as part of that broader movement, you mentioned the academic boycott there, but it's also an investment and sanctions campaign. Can you tell us a bit more about that campaign, that movement?
Yes, well, the BDS campaign came about after an appeal by a broad cross-section of Palestinian civil society. It is in its present form. I mean, the idea has been around for a long time. But in its present form, it was specifically in response to an appeal by Palestinian civil society for solidarity in the international community following a ruling by the International Court of Justice in 2004, which declared Israel's so-called separation barrier, or the apartheid wall, as it's called by the Palestinians, to be illegal under international law. And the onus really was on world governments to stop cooperating with it. So, for example, companies headquartered in other countries which were supplying materials to build the wall should have been told to desist. But unfortunately, governments didn't take any such action. So the principle is that the onus passes to civil society to enact our own boycott, divestment, and sanctions as a means of bringing home to Israel the fact that there has to be a cost to its serial violations of international law and international humanitarian law, and that it's not going to be tolerated by the world community. Israel can have its web of connections with the outside world and all the benefits that flow from that, or it can have its occupation of Palestinian territory, but it can't have both. That's the principle behind it.
Yeah, and critics of this campaign and of the sanctions have called it anti-Semitic. What would you say to that comment?
It's a good question. It's an allegation that's been put about me many times, but twice in a formal setting. So, for example, a couple of years back, the University of Sydney is linked with Israeli higher education through funded fellowship schemes, and we've called for those schemes to be revoked. And so once, a few years ago, when a professor, Dan Avnon, from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, wanted me to endorse his application for one of these fellowships, I refused, citing our boycott policy. One thing led to another, and a little while later, I found myself in the federal court defending an allegation by an Israeli NGO called Shurat Hadin that my policy was in breach of the Racial Discrimination Act of Australia. Now, there were lengthy pre-trial hearings. It never actually came to a formal trial, but in those lengthy pre-trial hearings, of course, that allegation then comes up against the need for evidence to be supplied and logical argument to be sustained. Mm. And as soon as it tries to pass those tests, it falls away because there is no evidence and there is no logical argument. Then again, a second time, after a row, I suppose you could say a row at a public meeting on the University of Sydney campus last year, involving a speaker who was trying to justify Israel's military incursions into Palestinian territory and attacks on Gaza. Again, I was accused of anti-Semitism. Unfortunately, the university's vice-chancellor put out a statement at the time which appeared to endorse that allegation. But again, when an investigation took place, the allegation was found to be unfounded. Because again, the minute it comes up against the need to actually supply evidence and sustain logical argument, it falls away. So there's a lot of allegations flying around about anti-Semitism, but in my case, in these two particular instances, it's proven to be completely unfounded. And the university eventually had to admit that.
And just one final question, Jake. You mentioned that there are a lot of letters going around, a lot of statements by the university. What's the next step when we find out what will be happening with the centre, if it will be downgraded or not?
Frankly, Mitch, the process has been a bit like nailing custard to the wall. Each time a specific reason is put to me as to why CPAC should cease to be a centre, I straight away supply information to refute that or to meet the question that's been asked, and then complete radio silence ensues.
Okay.
So, for example, a couple of weeks ago I was told, oh, we don't meet the criteria for a centre because we don't lead colleagues across the boundaries of different disciplines in critical engagement with issues of conflict and peace. That's exactly what we're renowned for. So I immediately supplied a lengthy list of examples of where we have done and continue to do just that. I didn't even receive an acknowledgement of my email. And that's over 2 weeks ago. So we're really shooting in the dark. We just hope the common sense prevails. It's quite clear from the response of the community at large that everybody is very concerned about this and that any downgrade of CPACs would indeed be seen as a political attack on us very widely. And I think that would be detrimental to the university's reputation and to the cause of intellectual freedom in the university. So I hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few months at the very least. Jake, thanks so much for talking to us on 2SER this morning.
Thanks, Mitch.
That is Jake Lynch, the CPAC's director over there at Sydney University, talking to us about the potential of the centre to be downgraded and what the effects of that might be on the great work that the centre does.